Welcome to Why Am I Laughing? The podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Ben Harris, and with me, as always, is my co-host, RJ Sines.
A remix, the remix. It was back to normal.
We're your in-house comedy gurus to talk about what's funny, why it's funny, and if you were a serial killer, how would you blend into society? I really like that question.
This is just easily piggybacking off of Garbage Man from last
Garbage
week.
Garbage Face. Yeah, well, what's your job of choice if you're Mr. Chop-em-up?
You gotta hide. You gotta hide. You gotta be like, well, maybe mailman. But that's the thing, like, I feel like all serial killers, like, Gary McMarshall was just a normal mailman until everyone who talked to us on this documentary said otherwise.
Yeah, he was my mailman, but he looked at me so weird every day, and then he killed my sister.
Oh, like, gosh.
Like, it's like, oh my gosh, like, what the heck?
She should be more sad.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if you're a serial killer, you gotta go the Dexter route.
Sure.
You gotta be
in
on
the police
opposite
force?
Side of the law. I mean, yeah. That you really are.
Nice.
Or maybe you become like a wizard or something.
Yeah.
Just go that route.
They're hiring.
The wizards are always hiring. Such a demand in this day and age.
Yeah, absolutely.
Such little magic. Ugh.
So many wizards, such little magic.
So many effing muggles.
I think I would just go straight Wall Street. Marty had... Douche.
The real Wolf of Wall Street.
Ooh.
A wolf in sheep's clothing,
nice.
If you will. Nice.
Yeah, I will. Well, today we are talking about stand-up comedy, that form of comedy that makes you fall over laughing while someone's upstage standing up.
And in case you're wondering, we're sitting down for this one.
Yeah, we wouldn't be taking this one standing up.
Hey, so many stand-up sit-down jokes. I'm not going to stand for that.
Yay.
Hey, there we go.
I'm not taking this line down.
Ah! Ah!
All right, RJ, what's in the news?
I got to sit down for this.
For the news hour.
All right.
Take a seat.
Yeah, I will. Some interesting news. Netflix has greenlit an 8-episode series for Amy Poehler, Natasha Lyonne, and Leslie Headland, formerly titled Russian Doll. So it's not titled that anymore, but that's the only kind of title that we're going with. The show will follow Lyonne's character, Nadia, on her journey as the guest of honor at a seemingly inescapable party one night in New York City.
8 episodes?
8 eps.
For one night?
For one night, yeah. So kind of make it... like a 24 kind of show where you're Jack Bauer, you're stuck at a party you can't get away from. Well, based on the title, Russian Doll, well, old title, and if the main character's name is Nadia, I can imagine she's Russian. Huh? Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe she's not. Maybe they just totally got rid of that whole thing. That's why they changed the name. But anyways, that sounds interesting. There's some really good talent behind this.
Do you know, we don't... No, the actual name of the project, right?
Right. It's still untitled.
Yeah, okay. Because I'm looking at IMDb's Amy Poehler in development, and there's two things. One's called Household Name, which has Carol Burnett in it.
Yeah, that's so the Carol Burnett show she's working
okay.
on.
Okay. And then there's another one called Balls. A woman is hired to head up the coach of a men's professional basketball team. And Amy Poehler is the only one attached. So, probably not either of those things.
No, this is breaking news, Ben.
Wow,
I'm way ahead of the game. This is
a scoop of hot news fresh in your mouth.
Hot, juicy news melting your taste buds right off.
Yeah, right in your ears.
I have like a really sensitive mouth, actually. I burn way too easily.
Oh, yeah, who doesn't?
That's such a bummer.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Not taking that line down.
Anyways.
Stand up.
Oh, I was just going to say wrapping up the news.
Yeah, wrap it up.
Yeah. I mean, it seems exciting for the most part, but, you know, we really have no way of knowing until we see it.
In that way, you're absolutely right.
I'm still waiting on those other two shows from Amy Poehler, by the way. I feel like I've brought those both up in the news in the last year and haven't seen them yet.
The Carol Burnett one.
And the Balls one.
You brought up the basketball one?
I swear I have.
I don't think so.
No, I've definitely read about it then. I mean, I don't say everything on the show that I read.
You don't read all your tattoos. Leave some of those tattoos for the public to read on their own.
On your own time, America.
While I'm sleeping, look at my body.
Take a knee on this, America.
Oh, wow. Too soon.
No, I'm not going to sit down for that.
Nice. Hey. Don't take a knee. Sit down.
Stand up or don't
sit
down.
Hey, I'm walking. Sit down.
Stand down.
All right. Well, that is some good news. Hopefully we get one of those three soon. Hopefully. So that's what we got for that. We are going to get into stand-up comedy now. Let me give you the best that I can. A little history on stand-up comedy. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Are you strapped up, strapped in?
Oh, yeah.
Strapped around?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. Here we go. So the origins of stand-up in America can go back to vaudevillian roots in music halls, burlesque shows, and early variety performances. Pioneers like Moms Mabley, Jack Benny, Bob Hope, Milton Berle, and Fred Allen would speak in front of the curtain and directly to the audience. That's the key, RJ, directly to the audience.
Oh.
Since then, stand-up as a performance art has exploded in popularity and become the signature of American entertainment. Topical, political, observational, motivational, blue, black, clean, mean. Stand-up comes in so many different forms. And as long as there's someone brave enough to step up in front of the mic, that will always be stand-up comedy, RJ.
The proof is in the pudding, Ben.
What?
You said it yourself. As long as I'm willing to step up to that mic... testing. You know there's going to be someone up there who's trying to get jokes off.
I know, yeah. It's a thing. It's a real, real thing. And it's not...
I was afraid it was fake, so thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, screw you. No, but like it's so different than most forms of humor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Someone funny in a circle of friends... it's not stand-up.
No.
Someone funny at a dinner party.
Not
close, stand-up. But not.
Yeah.
Someone like a good writer, someone a good storyteller. Sometimes they can make good stand-ups, but it just is not like an equal sign. It just doesn't mean you just go up and you're good. Like
it's its own
beast. It's so different.
There's almost nothing in this world that parallels stand-up comedy.
Absolutely.
As an art form and just as something that you would do.
Like right.
the thing that in the documentary Dying Laughing, we both love that came out this last year. Chris Rock talks about how comedians are the last great philosophers, and there's these people who are really telling the truth. And I love that whole bit, and I also really loved it because, I mean, for me, I've got a background in understanding, especially ancient philosophy. These guys would just show up in the middle of town and be like, "Here, here, I have something to say about mm-hmm. government and your role in humanity." And people would be like, "All right, we'll check this guy out." And they would like say their spiel. And then someone would be like, "You, sir, take my son as your apprentice." And the kid would be like, "Wait, what?" And that's like... that is so stand-up to me. Like, you are these people who get up on top of a, like, wheelbarrow and just, like, yell into the night and be like, "Hey, whoever's gonna listen to me, I got something to say."
Right.
Like, there's that kind of underdog kind of, like, "Look it, I'm just one person, but I got things and feelings that you might have also."
Yeah, there's some keys. It has to be... kind of this one versus an audience.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't always have to be, but it's usually majority one person just addressing an audience. And then, it's like, it's just crazy. The environment is something that just baffles me, where if you are good at stand-up, there is a palpable, like, funny environment going on.
Right.
Where if you go up there and you're trying to be funny, but you're not, man, it is brutal
cold.
Watching someone bomb is like the most uncomfortable thing you can do.
I kind of like it.
Yeah. You're very serial killer in that way.
I know. I get super serial killer, like anti-emotion. Like when I see someone bombing, like I actually am like laughing.
Yeah.
And it's weird. And doctors will later tell me that I need to be medicated But
currently, you're loving it.
I'm living the high life. Yeah, we'll get into more of that. But Ben,
so, RJ, yeah, why is it funny?
Why is stand-up funny? That is the question. This is a crazy topic, and I'm so stoked that we could talk about this today. Because stand-up really is the rawest, realest, most vulnerable performance art you can see. It is you and a crowd of people with nothing but silence and a microphone between you. The best stand-up has the perfect balance between performer and content. The content needs to be well written, well thought out, and make sense to an audience. You can have a computer read Robin Williams' stand-up material, but it takes a performer to give life to the joke. We love stand-up because the greats can perform real live magic in front of our eyes, distract our thoughts with an anecdote, and suddenly hit us with an unexpected punchline. You would think that after seeing stand-up comics for decades, humanity would finally figure out the trick and get bored of it. No. Stand-up is always learning, challenging the way comedy works, and providing us with a unique experience where we can laugh at the world we are in.
Period.
Let's pray. I don't know. Today's sermon. Yeah.
Stand-up.
Seriously. So good. And that's... There's so much that goes into it, and we had a whole episode early on, probably this time last year, about jokes, right? And we actually talked a lot of stand-ups in that episode, and I thought we were on episode 44. I almost got really excited, because that is episode 4, the jokes episode.
Whoa.
That went weird.
We're in the 40s, does that count?
Wild stuff. anyways, jokes are stand-up, but... not all stand-up is jokes, as we know. But the interesting thing with stand-up for me is that it's still jokes in like its purest primitive form.
Mm-hmm.
You need a vehicle for the words, right? So we give them to the George Carlins. We give them to the Jerry Seinfelds of this world who get up there and are able to communicate these ideas in such a precisive way, and in their own unique style too. There's so many different types of comics. I mean,
yeah,
the history of stand-up comedy is amazing, just to look at the web of variety that comes from these early voices, Jack Benny, Milton Berle, Moms Mabley, and just kind of branch out into, you know, we have Dimitri Martin on one end, the other end we've got, like, you know, Joe the Racist Cow Hugger is not a real stand-up, but, like, you know what I mean. Like, there's complete character acts. Jeff Dunham, totally. Even, like, puppets.
Like, even, like, I think, like, Sebastian Maniscalco has the Italian angry guy act.
Yeah.
Versus Dimitri Martin is plain white guy saying words.
Observational.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah, observational.
A little bit of music.
Yeah.
And everyone's got such a unique act. And that's where... it's just so interesting to me to see so many different types of comics flourish and find their own voice, because people on such a grand scale identify with it,
mm-hmm.
right? You're so uniquely Zach Galifianakis, but so many people see the things you say hilarious and find value in them. And that's so interesting, because you have more of a broader kind of appealing to everyone kind of comic, like Jerry.
Yeah.
And that makes sense. Oh, yeah, everyone kind of gets the things he talks about. Well, we got toast. Toast doesn't make any sense. Like, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But...
yeah, and it's pretty incredible how, like, Jim Gaffigan can spend, like 10 to 15 minutes on one subject, on Hot Pockets. Like, not even food as a subject, like, specifically Hot Pockets.
Yeah.
And then Dimitri Martin can fire off, like, 30 different topics in like, 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah. All one-liners.
Yeah.
King of one-liners.
I love when he's like, I think fajitas can wait a little bit. Wait, is it fajitas? What's the thing that comes out and it's sizzling as they give it to you?
Yeah, it's fajitas.
Okay, he's like, I think fajitas can just take a little bit more time. They're the showiest of all foods. Like, they sizzle. It's so funny. It's so good. But that's it. That's the complete thought. Oh, I said that, done. Now I move on to the next thing.
Next thing. Flies catching him with his applause after so many claps.
So good. And like, oh my gosh, I just think that's so interesting that you can have such a range.
Right.
Under the same umbrella of stand-up right. comedy.
And something that makes stand-up what it is how these comics are able to relate to this audience, right? That to me is where the magic is, right? I kind of talked about that in the thesis.
Let's talk about our first little question here. What makes it work? Like, how does this actually work?
Because sure,
that's a big factor of it.
For the magic, yeah. Right. I mean, what like I said, at its core, stand-up is just jokes. Mm-hmm. What makes it work? The timing, the content. Sebastian Maniscalco's crazy facial expressions,
yeah.
pacing, movement, stopping, pausing, like all these things. And we watch it and it seems so natural. These acts that people put on, it seems like, oh, this is like, you know, a normal routine. And well, I'm sure a lot of it comes naturally for the performer. It is all calculated.
Yeah.
Like they know exactly what they're doing.
I know. Yeah. That's the magic, right? Is that it seems so natural. It seems like this guy is making this stuff up. It's a conversation we just started, but it is not. He wrote this and he will say it the same exact way to a different audience.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. It's the prestige.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Well, the prestige is the punchline.
Well, I meant like it's just the movie.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman.
Yeah. David Bowie.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what? No.
Yeah.
I think three big things. You need good writing.
Yeah.
You need good timing
mm-hmm.
and good delivery.
Oh, yeah.
I think all three of those things, you are like entry-level stand-up. It doesn't even mean you're going to be good. It
exactly.
means you are able to like make your way.
Yeah.
You're not going to be that awkward. There's still so much you have to learn about commanding the audience, about like
capturing the audience,
yeah, about how those three things all blend together to make your unique style and voice.
Exactly.
It's a process. Yeah. I love hearing stuff like we were just talking about Judd when he during the filming of Trainwreck, is that right?
Yeah,
the movie, he would go and play a club in Boston every single night. Like, that's so interesting to me. Comics work. They like work their material like they're kneading dough. Like, it's like going to a new audience, saying it in this kind of inflection and this timing, got that laugh. Okay, calculate that and then
say
it
to
in
this,
this
audience and this inflection,
yeah,
and this timing.
Got this kind of laugh. Okay, well, let's. How do I mix and marry all those things? It's so interesting to me. There's a million different variables. And there will never be, like, there's so many more jokes to be said.
I know. And that's one of the interesting things. I mean, we've had our bouts in dabbling, doing stand-up this year, and just seeing how, like, doing open mics, you know, this is just cutting room floor stuff,
right.
Like entry-level material. And dudes will get up and do the same joke they did last week, maybe just the tiniest of tweaks, and it could totally make it.
Right.
Totally changes the game. I haven't had the luxury of seeing a comedian so many times I can tell where they twist and change material. I think the only thing that I can really speak to in that point is I'm a pretty avid fan of Pete Holmes. I've seen him twice perform, and I've listened to his podcast a lot. Some of the jokes he'll say on his podcast, like, oh, I'm working on this joke. Yeah, but yeah, but yeah, but yeah. And then I saw him like, a couple weeks later, and
perform
he had perfected
it.
That
okay.
bit. And it's like, oh, I see what you did with that. That's so
that's
much
awesome.
Better. That's so great.
That's awesome.
So that's like the only thing I could say for like on a professional level. But the, like you said, these variables that just like for every sentence, every noise, sound effect, voice, inflection, is ridiculous how all of that just bleeds together to create this new thing that's going on. And I love that magic that goes on, because it's like we kind of already talked about, you command this audience. It's this thing where this hive mind kind of happens, where if the performer can capture the audience and everyone's following along, he almost is leading their thoughts
mm-hmm.
to where he wants to take them.
Yeah.
And then the deceit, and then the switch, and then the joke, right? That's where people end up laughing even harder, because he's able to know where they think they're going and then switch it on them.
Yeah.
It's not always just like he walks, he's like, hey, let the chicken cross the road. It's like people aren't like, what? But the best comedians, like I think you already had pointed out, it's a conversation without the other people saying anything.
Right.
All.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. How do you have a back and forth, or even like, how do you tell a story? Which telling a story is, you know, best done in an intimate environment.
Right.
How do you tell a story to a crowd of, you know, 500 plus people if you're, you know, someone, a big name?
You pretend.
And make it an interest, like an intimate thing.
Right, yeah.
Like, how is that, like, it's so much about voice inflection and room, like, control. It's insane.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting to think of, I watched this interesting interview with George Carlin talk about how he didn't think of himself as an actor. He always thought of himself just a stand-up.
Yeah.
Just a stand-up. And didn't really like the act. But in my mind, like, I've done acting, mm-hmm. like, not really anything crazy, but done some acting, like, and done sketch comedy stuff. But doing stand-up, I'm still acting. Like, I have to put on, like, a different kind of hat for what I'm doing. Like, yes, okay. It's more real because it's me, and it's what I have to say, specifically a joke that I wrote down.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still trying to pretend to be energetic and be exciting and capture the audience.
Right. It's performer RJ, not
exactly
podcast or regular RJ.
Right. Even right now, like, this is, you know, I'm definitely excited to have this conversation. So right. It's more genuine, but I'm, you know, more energetic and more excited because I know this is podcast RJ. If I talked like this all the time to every person I met, I wouldn't have any friends. And that's probably why I don't have that many friends now that I think about it.
Oh, you know, in Israel. But yeah, so yeah, it's just this crazy combination of all these different things. Timing has one of the biggest roles. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we've beaten that.
Gosh, it's a reoccurring joke on our podcast.
Yeah, we've made that point. So maybe not timing, but like, think about like cadence or delivery, like your style of speaking. Like, there can be the same joke, like, you know what? I think working out is a scam. Versus, you know what? I think working out is a scam.
Yeah,
like. Those are two different comics. Someone who's like mad and like, I'm going to tell you what I think versus like, hey,
let me hit you in this.
I'm realizing this as we're talking right now and like, holy cow. So yeah. Like there's so much.
So many different angles to come from.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
You could probably take a set like a maybe not a Robin Williams set because I don't think anyone could do Robin Williams.
No, that's a bad example.
But like I don't know, just a classic Jerry set or something, mm-hmm. and do it mad or do it, you know, sad or do
right.
it in all these different ways, and it would have this different effect.
Right. And even he, like you, so I was just about to say, well, yeah, you could take Jerry as an example because he's got some of the most like plain jokes and like simple deliveries.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it is so not the case because he is just using the subtlest of inflections right. on all these little things to make it sound like maybe, oh, it's just so plain. But really, it's the perfect amount of this there, the perfect amount of right. this there. He's just not always over the top. You know, he's not Aziz Ansari.
Right.
He's not like, who else am I thinking? It's just like completely over the top. I feel like
Brian Regan.
Yeah, Brian Regan is super over the top as well. But anyways.
That's why if you listen to some stand-up and then you go home and you're like, Dad, I heard this really funny joke. And you just try to say it. If you don't like absolutely go word for word, inflection for inflection, the way the comic said it, your dad's going to be like, oh yeah, that's funny.
Isn't that crazy?
And you're gonna go, oh, you had to be there, you had to be there, you had to be there.
Do a test right now, folks at home. Go listen to your favorite stand-up.
Yeah.
And then say it to somebody totally straight face, totally normal, like bland.
The joke.
And they'll be like, oh, okay. And then say it another time to a different person with all the inflection. I can't tell you how many times, I mean, growing up listening to like Patton Oswalt records, uh-huh. and I would try to say jokes of his like, oh yeah, you should only be allowed so many birthdays. And people be like, huh?
What?
But if I'm like, what? No, you should only be allowed so many birthdays. There's gotta be a limit.
Yeah.
Okay? Like when you add, like, it's so interesting, they know what they're doing with
exactly.
that inflection, that character, or sorry, that performance value, I guess.
And then like, yeah, that's why when you say a stand-up joke, especially if someone else knows it, they are going to repeat it the way they have interacted with it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
if you go like, oh, remember Dan Cook? Like, slip and bleed from the anus. They're going to be like, ha, oh yeah, slip and bleed from the anus. And you're like, that's what I just said.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's so embedded in the way that it was delivered that if you were just like, yeah, I remember that stand-up
slip
joke.
Slip and bleed from the anus.
Slip and bleed from the anus.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
What?
Are you talking about like a personal experience or what?
What is that? It's not funny.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's magic.
Dane Cook is the master of just saying things that sound funny.
Right.
Not necessarily a joke half the time. Like you said, saying slip and bleed from the anus is not funny. But when you say it funny, that...
Well, yeah, I think he's storyteller.
Oh, for sure.
He is like, in the context of that story, when all of a sudden you go, more like slip and bleed from the anus! Like, that's when it's really funny. But like, yeah, he's storyteller. He puts you in a little environment.
Yeah.
It's like, let me tell you about the time I got to witness something. I've always wanted to see this. Guy got hit by a car. Like, all of a sudden, you're there with him. You're like, what? That's awesome. I want to see this, too.
He got hit by a car. He says car with, like, three H's in it. Car. That was a record that I played on loop.
Which one?
The Struck by a Vehicle.
Yeah, is that Retaliation?
Oh, yeah. I listened to that a lot when I was way younger.
It was so good.
And, like, yesterday.
One of my favorites of that one is... The him and the guy behind the BK
lounge,
the interaction that they have. Order me, order me. No, that's the drive through. I think that's in his first scene.
Yeah.
The one where he's like, he goes up and he's just asking for ketchup, and this guy's giving him attitude. He's like, be with you, buddy. He's like, but we weren't buddies. And if you're not buddies and someone calls you buddies, it's on. And like, it's so good. It's like, it goes from like buddy pal to like, he just calls him a jackass or something. It's so good.
Yeah. I feel like all comics have, if you've been able to make a record, you get the magic.
Right.
Right. Say what you will about Dane Cook nowadays. I'm personally not the biggest fan of him still.
Sure.
But that record still is able, like on audio. I'm not even watching him. I'm listening. There's a magic that he's able to tap into. All good comics can. And it's this interesting blend of how we're able to be tricked. And that's something that just blows my mind. Everyone can do that. Everyone can surprise us. Everyone can deceive us. We're sheep. We're just dumb animals that can just be so easily just like, you thought I was going to say this, but about
especially
this.
The people that you don't think are going to be able to surprise you, they surprise you the most.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when somebody's, like, not that funny and they say something hilarious, you're like, oh my gosh, that was really funny because that's not like you.
Exactly.
That's why I think Captain Holt is the best character on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That's our perception of you. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the funny thing. So what now if Captain Holt, I say he's one of the funniest characters on the show, do the things he say become less funny all of a sudden because I'm assuming he's funny?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
It's just a silly thought experiment. But that's my point is, like, the best comedians know who they are to the audience and how they can use what they have in their arsenal, whether it be their looks, their accents, their story, their background, to switch people up.
Yeah.
I mean, switch people up. Mix people up.
Trick them up. I think Dane Cook is another prime example of excellent mic control. He, like, has this really amazing ability to just, like, the way he says things into the mic are funny and like really like well communicated. Like when he's talking about every guy wants to be a part of a heist, he's like, get to the van, and he's like he'll bring the mic away, he'll be like get right on top of it. I did that zero justice
because that's a brutal. Tough
because that's a tough thing to do, like you know, like somebody like Jermetri Martin doesn't really need a ton of mic control.
No.
Someone like Jim Gaffigan, you're just talking into the mic.
Right.
But somebody big like Brian Regan, somebody big like Sebastian Maniscalco, who's going to act these things out and just be a larger than life Dane Cook walking around in a circle, like, you have to have really good mic control.
Totally McGoodly.
Who else can you think of that interacts with mic control?
The mic control thing, I think that's an interesting... Like, I mean, that falls in my mind in the category of, like, what sound can you bring to your act? Like, in your arsenal, just like Dimitri Martin every now and again has props or like his guitar, you can bring elaborate soundscapes into this machine that you're just holding. My favorite use of the mic is it's a staff, right? I mean, we have wireless mics now, but not a lot of stand-ups use the wireless mic. Why is that? Because there's something powerful of like someone holding something out in front of them and like using it as an instrument for their voice. It's so interesting what that does, I think, for the presentation. And one of the things that I always think of is a part of like the magic of how performers know what to do. John Mulaney does this bit where he, I think it's the joke where his dad, where they're on a road trip and they're like, everyone wants to go to McDonald's and they're going, McDonald's, McDonald's, sure. McDonald's. And so finally my dad pulls off the road into the drive-thru and we're like, yay, McDonald's. And so what he does is he orders one black coffee and he takes the mic. I can't even think of how it works, and now that I'm trying to explain it verbally, it's a lot more difficult. He like holds it at the bottom of the mic, just where the cord is starting, and then lets it slip through his hands, so you kind of hear like a pop, like a thunk, like as it hits, as he closes it in again on the top of his hand. So visually, you look at him and go, he drops his mouth, and the mic falls through his hands, and he catches it again, and it gives like a little like sound. And he goes on from there. But even that little bit, like, I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's so crazy magical.
Absolutely.
How do you do that? Just to be able to get those little sweep.
Yeah.
That's not a big Dan Cook sound effect. Right. But that captured exactly what he wanted. He didn't go, what the hell, Dad? Just that little escapey noise.
And it's so good.
Totally.
That's pretty credible.
Something else that's like, in the realm of how stand-up is funny and how we know it now,
sure,
is like what it's gone through, right? I mean, there's this amazing book called The Comedians. It just came out. It's this great biography. I'd recommend it if you can. Find it on the internet. It's on Amazon, I think.
Biography of just what, every comedian?
The history of comedians, Wow. Specifically like stand-up.
That's awesome.
And to see how, you know, comedy clubs start in the 60s, and you know that was a big thing in New York City, and then Carson comes to LA in 1972, and that becomes more, oh, well, there's LA clubs now because Carson has people doing stand up on his show,
right?
But what's really fascinating to me, and I want to spend some time reflecting on, is how stand up works now. I mean, in the digital age, you got dudes like Bo Burnham who got their start because they got lucky on YouTube. And I mean, it's no secret. I'm not knocking on him. That's right. What he says. He's like, I got lucky and I'm unhappy and I'm successful. Like, yeah. I got it all wrong. So that's something to me that's just so interesting, because in this new age where there's like this huge boom of comedy and there's so much, it makes it seem like it's a sexy thing to do. Like, oh yeah, like we could go do stand up. Like, this is like, anyone can do this. Everyone, you know, the joke that is beaten to a pulp by me mostly is, you get a special, you get a special, you get a special. Sure. Everyone gets a special these days, especially on Netflix. And there's a reason for it. And I think there's a huge demand, but I'm interested in like, where does this go? Like, do you think that people are more into the, is this because people are into it more, or is this because, or is going to lead to a decline?
I definitely think that Netflix has made stand-up comedy a thing again. Yeah. Like before Netflix, it's like, I guess, you know,
HBO had albums, specials.
Like albums were a really big thing. If you had a comedy album, like, but I mean, even then, like, how do you get that out? How do you let people know about that? Like,
right. You would go, you have on to go Conan on,
yeah, like
whatever,
a variety show, and then say like, yeah, I got this album, you should listen to it. And if like in that like little window of time they give you like what, like 8 minutes?
Yeah, maybe.
Then if you've proven that you're funny in that 8 minutes, or that people like you in those 8 minutes, then they might check out your album. It's like tough stuff. But Netflix is like, it's right in your home. You can listen to Joe Rogan, or you can listen to
Amy Schumer, yeah. Jerry Seinfeld, Bo Burnham, Jim Gaffigan.
What's the guy we just watched about smiling? He's like, should we start with my face? Yeah. Rian Johnson.
Rian Johnson, yeah. I think that's the pull.
Or maybe that's the director of Star Wars.
That is the director of Star Wars also. But you know what?
Okay, you look it up. But I just think that nowadays has really catapulted stand-up to be a new, or a, I don't know, an up-and-coming, really big thing. Because, yeah, you'd have to go out to clubs to go see them. And
now it's so much more accessible.
It's right there in front of you.
The man you were thinking of was Rian Hamilton.
Hamilton, not Johnson. I was close.
And so these comics, like, I had never heard of Rian Hamilton.
No one
granted,
has.
He did look familiar.
Oh,
but
sure.
That was because he was kind of a crazy face.
Tall, and he looked like a smiley face.
Yeah. Which could be, like, any balloon, but whatever.
He really could. He had a big part of his act about balloons and wicker baskets.
Exactly, yeah. So now that's so accessible, like, it just makes it makes it seem like more real, right? Before it seemed like this thing that, like, oh, only the greats can do this. Mm-hmm. And no, it was like this kind of underground, uncool thing to, like, try to do comedy. They talk about that a lot in the Dying Laughing documentary, about how it's like, yeah, like, for years, just kind of like going to clubs, like, was like a trashy scene. Like, where we go, it's like really clean, like,
yeah,
really nice place in the middle of Orange County.
Sure.
Like, not anything like underground, dingy.
Yeah, no.
Right up against the Irvine Improv, and people get up there and it's like celebrated.
Yeah.
Like, people look forward to it. And so I feel like the digital age has brought in, ushered in this new era of appreciation for stand-up comedy as a medium. Whereas before, like, growing up, the only reason I got in contact with the stand-up that I did know is because if I saw them in a movie and I, like, looked them up on the internet and saw, oh, this is a comedian. Oh, they have stand-up albums. Or 95.5 KLOS, they would do 5 o'clock funnies. So they would say a joke. And I was like, shoot, what was that guy's name? Patton Oswalt? Oh, okay, like, I gotta go look him up. I gotta go find that album. And that was, like, so much of like my childhood finding comedy. But nowadays it's like, you know, my younger brother, like, you see this guy's act,
yeah,
you see this guy, he's on, look at this bit he sent on,
for sure,
on YouTube. Anyone can film their stand-up set on YouTube and, you know, put it on their Twitter. Yeah, Twitter celebrities, you know, that's where I write a majority of my jokes, just on Twitter,
right? Yeah,
you know, that's a great place for comics to, like, have their name out there.
Yeah,
the name is stapled to the joke.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
It's pretty intense. Let's talk about our first times experiencing trying stand up.
Yeah, that's fun.
Because I think there's a big misconception of anyone can do this and you just go up there and be funny. There's a big misconception, I feel, around it. It's like
definitely.
Everyone thinks the trick is so easy, but it's really not.
Yeah, and you hear that a lot, and I think even the attitude of a lot of performers, even at the open mics we've been, seems to be, oh, anyone can do this.
I got this. Yeah.
And I don't know. I feel like the angle
and
that
they
we
don't got it because they
yeah, they fail miserably.
Do not get any laughs.
I feel like you and I come from a unique place and perspective because we've done so many different things performance wise.
Yeah, yeah.
So to look at this, we've all been like, "Oh, that's different. That's not what we do. We got a podcast. Okay, we just talk to ourselves."
Yeah, but still, I remember feeling like I perform.
Oh, no. Don't
like,
get me wrong.
I'll be comfortable.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I didn't say that we wouldn't be comfortable doing it, but we had respect for for the form. Like, it's not like we were those guys who were just like, oh, we can do this. Not a big deal. So I feel
I thought I actually was going to be all right.
I honestly, the first time I went up, I was like, yeah, I think, like, I can tell a story at the very least.
Yeah.
And the only thing that made me feel better about myself was seeing YouTube videos of dudes that went up, like, weeks prior. And I was like, yeah, I
bombed way harder.
Yeah, I could wipe the floor with these guys. Like,
yeah,
not a problem. So that made me feel better in a weird way. But, like, yeah, it was just funny. I did this whole story bit. I had just gotten in between a fight between my dog and a St. Bernard. And, like, my arm got chewed up by the other dog because you just are not supposed to stick your arm between two giant dogs, apparently. Like, I did that whole kind of shtick. And
yeah.
The doctor gave me lip about it, and I got, you know, thanks a lot, doc. Who's your best friend? Mike Vick? You know so much about dogs. Like, that, those kinds of jokes and stuff. But that was like a huge thing for me. It was like, I'm going up there for my first time and I have this big ass bandage on my arm. Like, I got to address this. I got to be upfront about this. And I was 100 times more nervous than I thought I would be.
Oh, absolutely,
dude. Everything went out the window.
Absolutely.
And that's the weirdest thing, because it's like you said, there's a level. It's like, I could perform. I could do this.
Yeah.
I've performed in front of more people than that before. Absolutely. On higher stakes for longer amounts of time with more content that I had to memorize. And I still got up there and I was like, hey.
Yeah.
So, my arm and stuff. Like, yeah. I wasn't that bad. I'm being dramatic, like always. But it was just clunky. And I mean, you even said what you were going to do when you went up and you called it.
I mean, yeah, like, my number one thing that I was like telling myself is just don't address the fact that you're doing stand up. Like, just even if you mess up, just go, just keep going. But that's not what happened. It was just like, it was the craziest thing. I just felt this like surge of energy, like, and it, I don't know if it was like, I've never like straight up just face to face perform something that I've written, like a monologue or something, or the fact that it's stand-up comedy is so like you versus this brick cement like environment that you just have to like whip into shape.
And
I just did not know how to go about doing that. And I was so jacked up on this massive amount of energy that just overcame me that my mind just went.
The eight Red Bulls probably didn't help you.
Yeah, no, that didn't help. But yeah, it was this crazy feeling of like, I am just helpless to the speed at which my mind is going, because it's such a different, it's a rush. It's a crazy feeling.
Yeah, yeah. And so we kind of already have gotten our taste of like,
I got one laugh.
Yeah, no.
That's it.
You got to laugh off of the improvised Anne Frank joke.
I did.
And it was very well done. The moderator even commended you for that. That was, it was impressive. I thought that was like, he was like, because it was the one thing that he said like super confidently. I was right. Like, well, at least he had that like good joke. And like, yeah, totally improv.
I did.
I'm like, what? Come on. Where's that in the podcast?
I know. I do need to step it up.
No, it's fine. You're good. But yeah, that it's just fun, and it's doing these open mics has made me really realize like, oh, even if you're not very good, like, I get why you keep coming back.
Right, yeah, it's, there's an addictive environment of like trying to figure out the key to the magic formula. Like, it's just,
right,
it's really, really interesting.
It's like every time you do stand up, you are looking at like a keypad passcode.
Sure.
Like an iPhone unlock thing, and you're trying to guess the number.
Uh-huh.
You just dee, 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 dee. And sometimes you try too many times, you get locked out. And some of these guys just get iced out.
Yeah, serious.
Like hardcore.
Locked out for 10 but, hours.
No, I feel like in one of the last few times that I'd done it, like that was just like, I feel like I was just able, maybe towards the end, to get a little bit more of that unlock. You only get like 3 minutes, so it's not like
sure,
you get a full 10 to really try your best. But no, it's been exciting, and I think that's, you know, who knows, maybe we could be coming to a town near you sometime soon.
Maybe.
If not, you know where to find us on Wednesday nights, that's for sure.
At the improv.
Yeah.
Trying to improv.
Well, trying to remember our written jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Holy cow. Stand up is a really, really interesting beast. And yeah, it's a fun topic. I'm glad we got to cover this one.
Yeah.
Is that all we got?
That's what we got. And in the future, maybe we'll just do like, why are we not funny as as failed stand-up
or
comics?
Look how far we've come as stand-ups.
There we go. Success.
But until then, it's time for Ben's Wacky Facts. That's right. It's time for Ben's Wacky Facts. This is the part of the show where I, Ben, say some wacky facts, and then the critics of Wacky Tomatoes give a corresponding percentage rating based on their overall wackiness. RJ, are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Incorrect.
What?
You're not ready, because it's not actually that. We are going to do a little different today. Instead of some facts, I'm going to give you some quotes from different comedians.
Quacky quotes.
How do you feel about that?
I think that's appropriate.
You feel?
Yeah.
All right. He feels. All right. Here we go. Here's some really interesting quotes from three different stand-ups. Here we go. Brian Regan was quoted saying, "Comedy is not supposed to be a thing." I like this. I like already. "Comedy is not supposed to be a thing. To me, comedy is a how, clearly. I'm a comedian, and I know that there are things called comedy clubs and stuff like that, but it seems odd that people would walk into a building and go, we're going to sit on chairs and laugh. And they're not even really interested in what they're going to be laughing about. It would be like a club where we're going to go into this place and cry. What are we going to cry about? I don't know. I just feel like crying. But comedy's a thing. It's where we just want to laugh. We just want to make our bodies shake. Isn't that a really interesting thought?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He's so smart.
I think it's so funny, though. He's like questioning his own art form. Like, why does everyone want to just come in and experience the same emotion?
Yeah, that is funny. I love that. I think when you get down to it, there's so much about being in the audience and experiencing something together that is unique to the human experience. We love being together and experiencing unique moments. Like, you and I go to a comedy show. It's hard to explain that to the next person that we see. Right. We saw this thing and this guy, and he got up and he said things, and we were laughing so hard. Cool. See you later, buddy.
Yeah. Like, what's who up? Cares? Yeah. I've been funny once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not the same thing.
Great quote. Do you want the critics rating?
Yeah. What did they say?
Critics love Regan. They're giving him a solid 88.
88?
That's
percent?
Yeah.
Wow. That's excellent. All right, well, we'll get into that wacky fact number two. Here it is.
Wacky quote.
Wacky quote number two. Kevin Hart, when he was asked about if there's any topics that he wouldn't joke about, said, I can't do a good Kevin Hart either, so I'm not going to do it.
My name's Don Cheadle. I'm the Black Iron Man. I'm Rusty. Me, me, me.
That's not Kevin Hart.
Yeah, he does that in that movie that he did.
Oh.
He was like doing a voice, but that's awesome. Like stuck in my head.
Sure, sure, sure. He said, yes, rape. Rape would definitely be one of them. I try to stay clear of homosexuality or anything to do with that right now, because it is such a sensitive topic in today's times. There are words that I've used in the past that I wouldn't use now because of the attention that those words get.
Which is like the exact opposite of some comedians' philosophies.
Right. They attack those words.
They only go after those words. They only go after those taboo topics. I mean, one of the greats, Lenny Bruce, people say he paved the way for these like blue letter comics who just are able to just tap into the things that you shouldn't say.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the role of comedy, is that it needs to say the things that we can't, because it can do it the right way.
Yeah.
And that's... Yeah, I love that. I agree with it, but I don't think that's all comedy has to be.
Sure, yeah, yeah. It's just his perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
But you think of like Jim Jefferies, like someone who's just unafraid.
Oh, yeah.
Just to say anything.
Seriously, Jim Jefferies, Joe Rogan even.
Yeah.
I think of
Patrice
O'Neill.
Different styles.
He's got some crazy stuff too. But anyways.
All right, here we go.
Great quote.
What did they say?
Critics giving it, 81.
Bah, bah.
They said not surprised.
Here's the last wacky fact. Wacky fact number three quote.
Yeah.
Quote, yes. Sorry, I'm so used to it. This is one short and sweet. You ready?
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis.
Mm.
Going unnoticed has never been my strong suit.
Oh.
I love that quote.
Look. I respect Jerry Lewis.
Oh, here it comes.
And respectfully, I say,
here it is.
Blow it out, Jerry R's.
Oh, no. What's wrong with a good Jerry Lulu?
I don't know. I respect the definitely the time, the place he came from. And I think a lot of the stuff he's done is funny. I think as he got older, like, he really didn't push comedy forward. I feel like there's things that he said about how women can never be funny that, like, really did not do any justice
sure.
to good women comics, like, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and now. And I think there's a lot of people that would agree with that. But I don't know. I don't have anything really against the guy. I just think he's rest in peace, of course. Sorry,
yeah, I think,
Jerry.
I think dude's a legend, and he came from a definitely different place.
I mean, sort of Don Rickles. And Don Rickles, like, was one of the most progressively minded kind of comedians and pushing the ball forward, and wasn't like trying to single out women. I mean,
not everyone is Don.
That's true. Not everyone can be Don. It's just, yeah. Yeah. It's a weird thing. But you know what? Jerry's got some good stuff. And yeah, the funny thing about him saying he doesn't want to go unnoticed, the reason that I said blow it out your arse is because he later in his life was notorious for like not giving anyone more than the allotted time for an interview, like completely shutting off his persona.
Well,
like,
he said going unnoticed has never been my strong suit.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It's never been a strong suit. But it's like in his later years, like he didn't want anything to do with the limelight unless it was like specifically paid for and like
sure
he did his act, whatever. There's an interview that just even like a year ago of him just like just stonewalling a dude to his face.
Jesus.
Just like in his own home. This is like, ugh, this is hard to watch.
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that you know, big celebrity personalities like that, they
oh,
are
it
pretty,
happens.
Pretty
even the Jerry Seinfeld anti-Kesha hug, which is not in my
You think
mind,
that's pompous? I don't think that's that
I don't
bad.
Think it's I don't think it's that bad
I think
at all.
It's
but,
just
but it's
Jerry.
Just, in my mind, it's, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's, you get preferences and you stand by them. Like,
right.
And some people have, like, pretty, like, outdated and bizarre preferences, but Jerry's not a hugger. Not a hugger.
Well, that's the quotes I have. What do we got a rating for that one?
That one got a 0%. That's
Excellent.
Crazy. I can't imagine why the critics
All
would give
the
you
way
that
down
rating.
There.
Oh, they said, blow it out your arse. Oh, that's weird.
Hey, that's what you said.
I know. Oh,
that's crazy.
Who would have thought?
All right, here we go. That means that it's time for hashtag whale mail of the week.
It's an email for your ears.
Trying to give you some musical background on that.
It's a little jingle.
Yeah.
Little jingle jangle. All right. This whale mail reads, just listened to the Jerry episode and didn't know if you saw his new Netflix special and your thoughts on it? Michael.
Michael.
Do you know what your thoughts are?
Excellent. Jerry. Yeah, we watched it. You watched it? I watched
it. Oh, yeah.
It.
Jerry Before Seinfeld.
Super good.
I really enjoyed it. And Ben, you know what the craziest thing is about that whole special?
No.
It's all content that he wrote before he did Seinfeld.
Oh, yes. That's nuts. That's the craziest part about that. That's what I told you.
I know. It's magical. That's so cool that it's still universal enough to translate and be... I'm sure he gives it some different punches for
sure.
Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
But, yeah.
But, okay, so when I was listening, I did not know that that was the thing, that... All the jokes, well, most of the jokes said were jokes written when he worked there back in the day before he was even anything. And I'm listening to these jokes and I'm like, man, I know he's done this stuff not only just in stand-up before, but also in Seinfeld. Like, really, dude? Like, you got new material for sure. I know you do. And then at the end, he said that I was like, oh, that's all of this is way more impressive now.
Right.
We've because heard, that's so nuts.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, too, just how he's such a accomplished performer that he can just take that. I mean, you know, I give it a solid B. Like, it was funny. The material was entertaining. The performance was well done. And his backstory for who he was also really
interesting. Yeah, that's my favorite part. It's like just getting to know him and to see his process and like the street lined
street
with all
papers.
The letters. That's
crazy man. He is one who takes, I mean, most comedians
meticulous.
Do take it very seriously, but I mean, this day and age, if you're a comedian, you just take notes on your iPhone. Jerry's got like binders and binders and binders filled with notes of all this stuff. But yeah, I liked it. I enjoyed it. I am interested in Jerry after Seinfeld. I want to see what he's working on in 2017.
Yeah, I know for sure.
Like, we just saw Louis C.K. 2017. I want to see Jerry Seinfeld 2017.
Yeah.
That would be worthwhile, I think.
I'm in.
See what he's cooking up.
What has he got cooking?
Got some stuff.
He does a little bit of it. He does talks about you don't take or you don't get in an Uber or you don't get on an Uber. You take.
You take an,
take
Uber.
An Uber. It's like they're like free. It's like M&M's in a bowl.
You take an Uber. So they give it to you, basically. Yeah.
It's free with the phone.
It's free with the phone. There you go.
All right. Well, that's thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Great email, folks. And we look forward to those. So make sure you send those in.
Absolutely. If someone's looking to find us, RJ, where would you send them?
You can always find our podcast on the iTunes podcast app, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher. Yeah, and also Patreon. You want some more content? We got it for you. Give us a dollar. Give us $2. Let's see where that gets you.
30 cents. See what happens.
Yeah, just see what happens. We don't know. Also, be sure to check out our Twitter page at WhalePod, our Facebook page, Why Am I Laughing, and the email, as always, whyamilaughingpod@gmail.com. Send us anything. We read it. Theories, fan fiction, death threats, social security numbers, cash. We take it. We read it. Not a problem.
Like a printout of some cash?
Yeah. Just the barcode.
Yeah.
030405.
We can use that.
Yeah.
Excellent. If you're looking to follow RJ on the Twitterverse, you want to go at Rodolfo the Brown.
And if you want to find Ben on Twitterverse, you can find him at and Frank Jokes.
Oh, no. It's not my thing.
It's a new Twitter account. Solely jokes on oh Anne Frank.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone who has been listening. We got to thank Ben Sound for our intro music, the Wolfpack for our outro music. And we're going to leave you with what we always leave you with, and that is comedy is all about... skin face. Sorry.
Garbage Man?
Yeah, Garbage Man.
I was going to say magic.
Yeah, that's good.
That works.
Peace.